Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind and in which I show how much mind matters. Hi, I am Udo Staatsbuchler and I welcome you to the second part of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I am live on air and I look forward to your call-in. You can comment on this show and you can also ask questions as long as they at least somewhat relate to what I'm talking about. If you want to ask any other questions, I'm happy to answer them by email. Go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Find my email address and write to me. I will reply within 48 hours. Mind Matters Online is one word. On page 4 of my website, you will find recordings of all my radio programs and you can listen to them at your leisure. I will upload each show the day after they were aired. Last week's program I had to cut short because I was running out of time, and I'm going to continue from where I stopped. And the subject I was about to address was active listening skills. And here we go. Hearing and listening are not the same. Hearing is the act of perceiving sound. It is involuntary and simply refers to the reception of oral stimuli. Listening is a selective activity which involves the reception and the interpretation of oral stimuli. It involves decoding sound into meaning. Passive listening is little more than hearing. It occurs when we have little motivation to listen carefully, such as listening to background music or when we are just being polite. Since only a small part of our mind is then paying attention, it is very easy to drift into thinking about other things, drifting away from what's being said. With passive listening, misunderstandings are as good as guaranteed. The cure for it is active listening. This is listening with a purpose. This happens when we want to gain information, obtain directions, solve problems, share common interests, and such like. It requires the listener to attend to the words and to the feelings of the speaker for understanding. It requires the same amount or even more energy than speaking. It requires the speaker to hear, it requires the listener to hear the various messages, understand the meaning, and verify the meaning by offering feedback. A few simple rules for active listening are: spend more time listening than talking. Do not finish sentences of others. Do not answer questions with questions unless you need to qualify the question. Be aware of your own biases and prejudices. Don't daydream or get preoccupied with your own thoughts when listening. Do not dominate the conversation. Plan your reply after you have listened to what the speaker had to say. Analyze by looking at relevant factors only. Play back to the speaker what he had said to ensure that you understood everything as the speaker had intended. Provide feedback by paraphrasing what had been said. Now use your own words rather than repeating the speaker's words. And for speaking, there are the following hints. When speaking or explaining something, ask if your listener is following you. Give your listener the chance to comment or ask questions. Be clear about what you say. Make eye contact. Make sure that your words match your body language. Don't be vague, but also don't complicate the issue. Do not ignore signs of confusions or boredom or drifting. We often hear that the content of a message is composed of 55% visual components, 38% auditory components, and only 7% language. This is not quite so. Yes, listeners derive information from visual, tonal, and verbal cues, but the percentage derived can vary greatly depending on a number of factors like context of the message, how well the speaker is known, how well respected he or she is, and numerous other factors. Last week's talk was also about verbal and nonverbal communication and the many reasons for misunderstandings. And one of the great reasons for misunderstanding is our own mindset. The brain registers all the details of what we hear or see in order to interpret it as being pleasant or unpleasant, clear or confusing. Therefore, a visual image is not just light waves measured by a very clever optical tool, our eyes. It consists of our personal interpretation of what we see based on millions of neural firings that take place in our brain. These firings interact with an existing network of billions of synaptic recordings. This applies not only to visual images, but also to the auditory inputs, as well as all other sensory inputs. This interaction creates our emotional response to the event, what we hear, see, taste, or smell. This enormously complex process makes it possible for us to enjoy or dislike or be indifferent to what we experience. This interpretation becomes our individual reality, a very subjective reality, which can differ completely to another person's reality. Because we all experience the world around us differently. We see things differently. We have our own priorities, beliefs, values, and attitudes, which together make up our mindset. Our mindset may not make sense to other people, and the way other people think and behave may not make sense to us. This explains apparently random, illogical feelings and reactions. The secret of our hang-ups, prejudices, irrational feelings and perceptions boil down to how we individually encode our representation of the world around us. This is our personal map-making system, and it determines how we respond to events and to other people, how we view them, how we understand them, and how we respond to what they say. Alfred Korsivsky is a great philosopher and scientist who developed the theory of general semantics. And in his very important book, which was published in 1933 already, Science and Sanity, he stated his dictum, and it is, and I quote, "The map is not the territory. Our view of the world can only be a representation of reality." Unquote. How important is this for excellent communicators to consider? Very important. In particular, when we consider that this is not just a representation of reality, but our individual representation. Let us move on with communication. There are 5 points that need explanations. The meaning of your communication is the response you get. That's what it really is, isn't it? Meaning means all the references, frames, evaluations, understandings, beliefs, all that is in your mind that you want to transfer to another person. Communication is what you are saying explicitly and implicitly, what you are saying with words, and what you are communicating non-verbally in tone, gesture, movement, context, and so on. Response is how the other person interprets your words and the non-verbal expressions, and then responds from the meanings it generates in him or her. Response indicates meaning. In other words, you never know what you have communicated, only what you said or did, not the interpretation the other makes of it. Communication is best achieved through simple planning and control. Most conversations sort of drift along. Outside of social chit-chat, this is wasteful. You seek communication rather than chatter. To ensure an efficient and effective conversation, there are three considerations. You must make your message understood, and I spoke about this before. You must receive and understand the intended message sent to you. That's also something I discussed early on. You should also exert some control over the flow of the communication. This is really important. How often did you let a conversation just drag on and on without any purpose and any meaning, and you did not have it in you to end it? Exerting control means to be confident and assertive. Don't waste your time and take control. Let me repeat the importance of listening, and I mean active listening. As an excellent communicator, you must learn to listen as well as to speak. Those who dismiss this as a mere platitude are already demonstrating an indisposition to listening. The phrase may be trite, but the message is hugely significant to your effectiveness as an excellent communicator. If you do not explicitly develop the skill of listening, you may not hear the suggestion or the information which could launch you to fame and fortune. Let me move on. How can we avoid ambiguity? We all have experienced, as speakers as well as listeners, that words mean not always what the dictionary says they do, but rather what the speaker intended. Suppose you receive an instruction which contains an ambiguity which neither you nor the person who gave you the instruction notices, and which results in you doing something terribly wrong. Who is at fault? The answer must be, who cares? Your time has been wasted. The mistake has been made. Attributing blame may be a satisfying or a defensive exercise, but it does not address the problem. In everything you say or hear, you must look out for possible misunderstanding and clarify the ambiguity. One of the greatest sources of misunderstanding is that words often have different meanings depending on context or culture. For example, a dry country lacks either water or alcohol. Suspenders keep up either stockings or trousers. A funny meeting is either humorous or disconcerting. A couple is either a few or exactly two. If you recognize that there is a potential misunderstanding, you must stop the conversation and ask for the valid interpretation. A second problem is that some people simply make mistakes. Your job is not simply to spot ambiguities, but also to counter inconsistencies. In thinking over several alternatives, you may suffer a momentary confusion and say one of them while meaning another. There are good scientific reasons to do with the associative nature of the brain why this happens. You have to be aware of the potential problem and counter for it. Finally, of course, you may simply mishear. The omission of one simple word could be devastating. For instance, how long would you last as an explosive engineer if you failed to hear the simple negative in the following sentence? Whatever happens next, you must not cut the blue wire. So, the problem is this. Words have multiple meanings. If they might not be the ones intended, or if you have misheard them in the first place, how do you know what the speaker meant? To avoid this, or to clarify this, there are certain rules. Rule number one is playback for confirmation. Simple. You ask for confirmation. You say, let me see if I understood correctly. You are saying that whatever it is, what he said, the speaker said, and you rephrase what the speaker said. If this playback version is acknowledged as being correct by the speaker, then you have a greater degree of confidence in your own understanding. For any viewpoint, message, decision, there should be a clear, concise, and verified statement of what was said. Without this, someone will get it wrong. Rule number two is paraphrase for confidence. If you are still not 100% convinced after playback, paraphrase. Formulate the message that you received differently and hear if the meaning of the message stays the same. If the purpose of your communication is negotiating some kind of business deal or some other contract, you still need to write down the details of the deal or contract. Rule number three is give background for context. When speaking yourself, you can often counter for possible problems by adding information and so providing a broader context in which your words can be understood. Thus, there is less scope for alternative interpretation since fewer are consistent. When others are speaking, you should deliberately ask questions yourself to establish the context in which they are thinking. Rule number four is feedback. You need feedback because without it, you cannot be sure that people have understood your message. Sometimes feedback is verbal and sometimes it is not. We have looked at the importance of asking questions and listening carefully. However, feedback through body language is perhaps the most important source of clues to the effectiveness of your communication. By watching the facial expressions, gestures, and posture of the person you are communicating with, you can spot the confidence levels of the person, or defensiveness or agreement, comprehension or lack of understanding, level of interest, level of engagement with the message, truthfulness or lying and dishonesty. As a speaker, understanding your listener's body language can give you an opportunity to adjust your message and make it more understandable, appealing or interesting. As a listener, body language can show you more about what the other person is saying. You can then ask questions to ensure that you have indeed understood each other. In both situations, you can better avoid miscommunication if it happens. Feedback can also be formal. If you are communicating something really important, it can often be worth asking questions of the person you're talking to make sure that they have understood fully. And if you're receiving this sort of communication, repeat it in your own words to check your understanding. Let us move on to practical points about communication. To plan your communication, you need to understand your objective. Why are you communicating? You need to understand your audience. With whom are you communicating? What do they need to know? plan what you want to say and how you will send the message. Seek feedback on how well your message was received. When you know what you want to say, decide exactly how you will say it. You are responsible for sending a message that is clear and concise. To achieve this, you need to consider not only what you will say, but also how you think the recipient will perceive it. We often focus on the message that we want to send and the way in which we will send it. But if our message is delivered without considering the other person's perspective, it is very likely that part of the message will be lost. To communicate more effectively, you need to understand what you truly need to say. Anticipate the other person's reaction to your message. Choose words and, if appropriate, use body language that helps the other person really hear what you are saying. Also, whether you speak or write your message, consider the cultural context. If there is potential for miscommunication or misunderstanding due to cultural or language barriers, address these issues in advance. Consult with people who are familiar with these and do your research so that you are aware of problems you may face. Using email to send simple direction is practical. However, if you want to communicate a complex task, an email will probably just lead to more questions. So it may be best to arrange a time to speak in person. And if your communication has any negative emotional content, stay well away from email. Make sure that you communicate face to face so that you can judge the impact of your words and adjust these appropriately. When you determine the best way to send a message, consider the following: the sensitivity and emotional content of the subject, how easy it is to communicate detail, the receiver's preferences, time constraints, of course, and the need to ask and answer questions. As with all effective communication, you should decide in advance on the purpose of the conversation and the plan for achieving it, in short, the outcome that you want. There is no alternative to this. Some people are proficient at thinking on their feet, but this is generally because they already have clear understanding of the context and their own goals. You have to plan. However, the following are a few techniques to help the conversation along. Let me pause here so that I can give people who have tuned in late the following information. I am live on air, and I more than welcome your calls, provided you have comments or questions relating to what I'm talking about. However, I will answer all other questions by email. Go to my website, http://www.mindmattersonline.info, and find my email address. Mind Matters Online is one word. Email me your questions, comments, or suggestions, and I will reply within 48 hours. On page 4 of my website, you find recordings of all my previous radio programs so that you can listen to them at your leisure. I upload each show the day after it had been aired. Now, let's get back to communication again. As a communicator, you want to emphasize your assertiveness. The definition of to assert is to declare, to state clearly. This is your aim. If someone argues against you, even loses their temper, you should be quietly assertive. Much has to preach this simple fact, and the final message is a three-week plan action. Acknowledge what is being said by showing an understanding of the position or by simply replaying it, which is a polite way of saying, I heard you already. state your own point of view clearly and concisely with perhaps a little supporting evidence. State what you want to happen next. Move it forward. This is important. Oftentimes, one point is argued and argued and argued, and the argument runs in a never-ending circle. This is pointless. Once both parties have stated their position, that's it. Next step is to move on. What outcome do you want? Even if there is no agreement on the point that has been argued, propose how you want to move on. When it comes to confrontations, when you have a difficult encounter, do not lose your self-control because simply it is of no use. Stay cool and calm. However, sometimes it may be useful to lose your temper for effect, just to convey your annoyance. You can do so, but beware of staying in control and not being caught up in the moment and then really throw a fit. Insults are ineffective. If you call people names, then they are highly unlikely to actually listen to what you have to say. In the short term, you may feel some relief at getting it off your chest, but in the long run, you are merely perpetuating the problem since you are not addressing it. This is common sense. There are two implications. Firstly, even under pressure, remember this. Secondly, what you consider fair comment may be insulting to others. And the same problem emerges. Before you say anything, stop, step back, think, and establish what you want as the outcome. Plan how to achieve this, and then speak. Finally, if you are going to criticize or discipline someone, always assume that you have misunderstood the situation and ask questions first with check the facts. This simple courtesy will save you from much embarrassment. When you are seeking information, there are two ways of phrasing any question. One way, the closed question, is likely to lead to a simple grunt in reply. Yes, no, maybe. The second way, the open question, will hand over the speaking role to someone else and force them to say something a little more informative. For example, suppose you conduct a review of a project with your assistant and it goes something like this. Have you finished Project X? Yes. Is everything written up? Nearly. So there is documentation left to do? Some. Will it take you long? No, not long. Before your fingers start twitching to place themselves around your assistant's neck, consider that your questions are not actually helping the flow of information. The same flow of questions in an open format would be, what is left to do of Project X? What about the documentation? When will that be completely finished? Now try answering yes or no to those questions. Open questions are extremely easy to formulate. You establish in your mind the topic or the aim of your question, and then you start your sentence with one of the words, what, when, which, why, where, how. I repeat it. What, when, which, why, where, how. And then let others speak. Of course, there is more to a conversation than just the flow of information. You may also have to win that information by winning the attention and the confidence of the other person. There are many forms of flattery. The most effective is to give people your full interest. To get them to give you all their knowledge, you must give them all your attention. Talk to them about their views on the subject. Ask questions. What do you think about that idea? Have you ever met this problem before? How would you tackle this situation? Another great tool is silence. Silence is effective and much underused. People are nervous of silence and try to fill it. You can use this if you're seeking information. You ask a question and then you lean back. The person answers. You nod and smile and keep quiet. And then the person continues with more detail simply to fill your silence. At the end of a conversation, you have to give people a clear understanding of the outcome. For instance, if there has been a decision, restate it clearly, just to be sure, in terms of what should happen and by when. If you have been asking questions, summarize the for you significant aspects of what you have learned. Let's look again at a few simple rules for active listening. Do not dominate the conversation. Spend more time listening than talking. Don't daydream and don't get occupied with your own thoughts. Look at the speaker directly, focus on him, and be aware of body language. If you are focused on yourself, on your own feelings, it might create confusion. Defensiveness when you feel under attack, or superiority when you feel that you know more. Use your own body language to convey your attention, which means to smile or to nod when appropriate. Be aware of your own biases and prejudices. Suspend your emotions and your opinions, because your own background and bias, as well as your past experiences, can change the meaning of the message that you receive. Remember that your interpretation can and will affect the meaning of what's being said. Be also aware that we tend to dismiss a person if they cannot articulate the thoughts properly, if they speak too slowly, or if we perceive them be of lower status. On the other hand, we listen more careful if we perceive the person to be of higher status. Do not finish sentences of the speaker. Do not answer questions with questions. Plan your reply after you have listened to what the speaker had to say. Don't mentally prepare your rebuttal whilst listening. Analyze by looking at relevant facts only. Do not interrupt with counter-arguments. Check if you have understood. Interpret after you feel that you understood the message. In any conversation, be aware of semantic distractions. That is, if the speaker uses words different to what we prefer. My very own bugbear or bugbears are the use of the word chairman if the person concerned is a woman. It's as if the word woman is a swear word. Or if someone is talking about free gifts, gifts are meant to be free. Both of them, when used, make me focus on them and not on the message. In case of negotiation or other important discussions, what is the outcome that you have in mind? What do you think the other person wants? Think about compromises and trade-offs. What are you both comfortable to give away? Think about alternatives. If agreement cannot be reached, what are the alternatives? How much does it matter if you don't reach agreement? What about the possibility to agree to disagree? Think about consequences. What are the consequences of you winning or losing the discussion or the argument or the negotiation? Think about possible solution. Based on all considerations, what possible compromises might there be? According to the Bible, the Tower of Babel collapsed because people could no longer communicate. Their speech became so different that no one could understand another. You need to communicate to coordinate your own work and that of others. Without explicit effort, your conversation will lack communication, and so your work too will collapse through misunderstanding and error. The key is to treat a conversation as you would treat any other managed activity, by establishing an aim, planning what to do, and checking afterwards that you have achieved that aim. Only in this way you can work effectively with others in building through common effort. The key points of good communication are that a lot of effort goes into communication, into communicating effectively. However, you need to be able to communicate effectively if you're going to make the most of the opportunities that life has to offer. By learning the skills you need to communicate effectively, you can learn how to communicate your ideas clearly and effectively, and understand much more of the information that's conveyed to you. As either a speaker or a listener, or as a writer or reader, you are responsible for making sure that the message is communicated accurately. Pay attention to words and actions, ask questions, and watch body language. This will all help you ensure that you say what you mean and hear what is intended, because excellent communicators not only convey the messages in a way that is free of ambiguities, they also make sure that they understand the meaning of the messages that they receive as the sender of the messages had intended. Excellent communicators are capable of conveying the wishes in such a way that it makes a positive outcome more than likely. In other words, they can make you do what they want you to do. This brings me to the next theme of this program, but before I go into it, listen to what Tony Robbins said, who is one of the greatest communicators of our times. And I quote, "The way we communicate with others and with ourselves ultimately determines the quality of our lives." Unquote. Think about that. The next theme is communication, again, and feelings. You may wonder what feelings have to do with communication, other than that we convey our feelings to others. But there's a lot more to it. In fact, our life is determined by our feelings, not by our intellect, not by our ability to think rationally and logically, only by our feelings and emotions. We make decisions based on our feelings, and then we justify them rationally and logically. And the greatest motivators for us are pain and pleasure, namely our efforts to avoid pain and to gain pleasure. This is not new. It was Sigmund Freud many years ago who formalized this thought in his pleasure principle, and long before him, the Greek philosopher Aristotle wrote about it. The good news is that we can choose our feelings. Most people believe that feelings are spontaneous responses to an event. And to some degree, it is so. But we can, if you know how to, change these feelings or enhance these feelings depending on what kind of feelings we want to experience. In other words, we can change unwanted feelings that are useless to us into feelings that are useful to us. We can control our feelings without the need to suppress them. Why is this important? First and foremost, this is vitally important for our happiness, and I wrote about it in my book, Happiness Discovered. It is also important for our health, for our mental health, as well as for our physical health. Again, something that I mentioned in my book when I discussed PNI, psychoneuroimmunology. And it is also important for our very own personal development. how successful we are in whatever we do, how we plan our life, the achievements we want to have. Since our feelings determine these outcomes, it is necessary to be in control of our feelings. What happens to us and our feelings? Well, I mentioned it earlier today. We experience something. Or let us say somebody says to you something that you interpret as an insult. Where does this interpretation come from? It comes from your mindset. Your mindset is, as I said before, made up from your beliefs, biases, prejudices, your background, your past experience, hence also from your past interpretations. This is where the billions of synaptic recordings in our brain come in, I talked about earlier. This is how you immediately perceive what you heard as an insult. I give you another example. If we run into a problem at our place of work or business, we can look at this problem with fear, seeing it as an insurmountable obstacle. Sit back and wait until it goes away, which will probably never happen. Or we ask for help, or we see it as a challenge and tackle it full of confidence. The fear that we feel and that makes us sit back and do nothing, the feeling of insecurity that makes us ask for help, and the feeling of confidence that makes us tackle the problem are creations of our mindset. Since we are responsible for just about everything, we are also responsible for it. We have put it into our system. Before you can expect any major change in your life, you want to become aware of the possibility and accept it as a fact that you can change the way you think, change the way you feel, and to change your life by controlling your mind, by controlling your brain. Often people confront me saying that the problem is real. It is reality, and their feelings toward it are spontaneous responses. How can they change a reality, and how can they change spontaneous responses? Well, whatever the problem is, it is your own personal problem, your individual reality. Look at it that way. We experience the world around us with our senses of hearing, seeing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. What we see or hear is sent to relevant areas in the brain. Our own upbringing and our various experiences that we had in our life, it's again our mindset, have created certain structures that we use as filters through which we view these images or listen to what is said, and which creates our emotional response to what we see or hear. Most of us have different upbringing, different experiences. Therefore, most of us have different mindsets. And because of our different mindsets, our emotional responses to the same image can be different. For example, if there was an earthquake in a particular area, some of the people in this region would start screaming, be terrified, and in sheer panic run all over the place. One other group of people would say to themselves, how very interesting this is. And another group would just shrug it off, saying, well, it's just another earthquake. Simple. Each of the three groups has a different perception of this event. It follows that realities are matters of perception, everyone's own individual perception. We come to the end of this show. Next week, I'm going to continue with this theme. If you have any questions or if you would like to comment on my program, go to my website, mindmattersonline.info, and find my email address. Send me your question and we'll answer them within 48 hours. For now, I leave you with what the great Greek philosopher Epictetus said, who lived from 55 to 135 AD. First learn the meaning of what you say and then speak. Tune in again next week, same day, same time. Goodbye.